You know that the West tried so hard. Anthony Blinken, Janet Yellen, Olaf Scholz went to China to force them, to convince them not to help Russia. And right now, this visit of Xi to Europe shows the same manner that he comes to Europe and he goes to Serbia and Hungary that are much closer to Russia than France and other countries. We know that the West is wishing to distance China from Russia. How do you see the situation? Is that possible in your opinion?
No, I don't think so. We have to remember that the main target of the US and hence of the Europeans, because the leading figure here is the US. And the main target is China. This is what challenges the US leadership, especially in the Pacific area, but not only, and also economically, domestically, if you want. And you may remember all the issues with Huawei and now this kind of war that you have with electric vehicles and things like this. So the Tesla is the problem here, because they don't sell cars anymore because they're too expensive. So as a result, the target is China. The reason for trying to weaken Russia was in the mind of certain individuals in the State Department and others, beyond the fact that there is still a hatred of Russia since the Cold War. I mean, for many people, the Russians are still communists somehow. I don't understand how they come to that, but that's a little bit, I mean, if you read some texts, sometimes they talk about Russians as communists. So, yeah, don't understand why, but that's probably well beyond reason here. In any case, there is a hatred of Russia, a basic hatred and a fear of Russia in Europe and in the United States. But this was not the main reason for weakening Russia. The main reason was to make Russia collapsing is that so Russia could not reinforce China. Because also geographically, you see that those those two countries are very close. I mean, they have common borders, obviously, and they are complementary because Russia, and we see that very much now, that Russia needs China to improve its industrial production and all that. And China needs Russia for raw material and commodities and all that. As a result, those two countries are the perfect complement to each other. And in addition to that, they had they are good relation during the Cold War, not always, but they had relatively good relations during the Cold War. And especially after the end of the Cold War, they managed to develop, let's say, normal relationships. And the war that the US started to wage against China brought, in fact, China and Russia together. And the war in Ukraine brought then Russia together with China. I mean, this since the beginning of this war and the sanctions that were applied to both China and Russia, those two countries understood that their fate is linked and that they have to face the Western challenge together. And we have seen that on the economic side, industrial side, the cooperation has improved, drastically improved, and on other fields as well. I mean, the diplomatic scene as well. I mean, we see that these two countries work in the same direction, if you want, in the Middle East especially, and all that. As a result, the West, by addressing the way they addressed Russia and China, has just created a Eurasian bloc. And this bloc is more robust as ever. And even if I remember in the late 2021, as people were mentioning some rapprochement between Russia and China, you had many experts saying that is no way because the Russians despise the Chinese and the Chinese think they are more developed than the Russians and they have territorial disputes. And so there is no way they can have a long-lasting cooperation. But I think it's a total misjudgment. Both governments in Russia and in China are extremely rational. They are extremely pragmatic. And they're no longer the ideologist type of government you had in the heart of the Cold War in the 60s, when you had these ideological differences between Mao Zedong and the leadership in Soviet Union, and you had even clashes at the border between Soviet Union at the time and China. Well, we are far away from that today. I mean, they have realized that they share a common fate and that they have to work together. And I think all the small disputes they may have are put aside, and there have been several communiques, by the way, by the Chinese foreign ministry and the Russian foreign ministry as well, or the governments, better said, they have made communiques that these differences are put aside. They are no longer affecting the relationship between the two countries, and now they are working together for good. So this is no question that this relationship will continue. Is robust, is made even more robust by all the sanctions and the aggressive posture of the West. So this should be taken as granted for the foreseeable future that this connection would last. Now, this is the problem of the West, that they see the threat from the Chinese. I mean, even if the US tends to portray China as a military threat, a security threat, the problem is in fact an economic and political problem. It's the influence of China driven. I mean, it's a political influence which is driven by economy, and China. Because it has enormous capacities, enormous capabilities as well, it is in a position to help countries and to extend its influence through the support it provides, especially in the global South. And that's exactly the problem that the US is seeing. In addition to that, you have a more direct problem that since the West has spent trillions of dollars and euros fighting wars around the globe, while at the same time China was putting its trillion of dollars in research and development and has developed. Today China has the leading edge in almost all technologies that you may need for the future, and the investment of China in research and development is absolutely enormous and is not matched with what the West is doing. As a result, we see that technologies we could qualify them as a future technology or future technology for the future, like EVs and this renewable energy and so on and so forth. All the research coming from China is absolutely gigantic. As a result, the West is losing its edge on that. And we see now that Germany starts to produce, I mean, has that's one of the reasons why Olaf Scholz was going to China, because the German investment in China has in fact jumped to the sky, because they see that their future is in cooperation with China, especially for cars, because the Germans have excellent cars, but these are cars developed on past technology, so to say. They are not in a position to compete with China, especially price-wise. They're not in a position to compete with China for EVs. As a result, they need to have a cooperation with China to produce this kind of technology. And as you may or may not know, but in Europe, the European Union has set a deadline for producing thermal engine cars. And by 2035, there should not be any petrol engine cars produced in Europe. I mean, it should only be with renewable energies. As a result, but the interesting thing is that this was announced a couple of years ago, but now the European car builders are saying that they will not be able to meet that deadline because they're not ready for that. So they don't have the technologies to produce that. They may certainly produce cars, but they might be extremely expensive cars that may not respond to the needs of most consumers. It probably will cover the needs of the upper edge of the consumers, very expensive cars, but not the others. As a result, they have to take into account the Chinese market. And they have to take into account Chinese technology to address that. Same happens to the US today. And that's a reason why I was mentioning Tesla before, because Tesla produce, I mean, I don't know, but I assume they are very good cars. I have no question on that. I'm not an expert in that, but I can assume they're very good cars, but they're very expensive cars. And now what you have in the market, coming on the market, you have Chinese cars that seem to have very good specification. And above all, they are very affordable, meaning that if your aim is to have EVs all over by 2035 or something like that, you can only have cheap. I mean, you only, it's not only, but you also need to have cheap cars for this market. And this is exactly the reason why Tesla sees the Chinese as a threat. And as a result, you have, I don't know exactly, because I'm not following these questions very closely, and I may be wrong on that, but as far as I remember, the US wants to have taxes and special taxes on the Chinese EVs entering the US market. So meaning that they want to distort competition, which is interesting, because the US has always promoted the free market and this market economy, that where the best, the Darwinist approach to the market, where the fittest should win and things like that. But as what we see today is exactly the opposite. We try to have the Marxist approach to market by having enhanced protectionism to protect what we are not able to produce. That's also interesting. And to put sanctions on China, on microprocessors and all that, so they cannot produce those cheap vehicles that may end up on our markets. So we are totally distorting the market. We are totally against what we have said during almost 100 years since the end of World War II to promote free market and free market economy. So we are exactly in the opposite, because the leading edge is now in China and no longer in the West. So it's easy to promote a free market when you are leading the market, but when others are leading the market, it becomes more tricky. And that's exactly what we are witnessing. And that's also, by the way, we have mentioned this changing world order, but of course the rest of the world also sees that. And says that we are not consistent with what we have said ourselves. And this is the problem. The thing is that, as I have already said on this channel, when you want to stand out of the crowd, there are two ways. Either you can raise your head above the head of the others because you are better, because you can prove yourself, and you raise your head above the one of the others. But when you are not able to raise your head, the other way is to make the others to lower their head. And that's exactly what we are making. Instead of being better than the others, we try to make the others worse than they are. And we sanction them so that they cannot compete with us. This is a total distortion of my understanding of the free market. And I know that a free market has a lot of drawbacks, and we may discuss that. And personally, I think I have always advocated the free market, but it must be done with reason and in a very sane way and not insane way. I mean, we need to have a free competition, but for that we have to create the capabilities. We need to build to educate people to be better, to have better engineers, more engineers, better individuals, a better society but what we are doing now is exactly the opposite. We are banning free speech because we are afraid of, because we cannot compete with free speech. So we have to ban free speech, and we have to ban the others that may compete economically or industrially with against us, because we are not in a position to compete, because we don't have enough capacities and capabilities. That's, I think it's... We are very much in a turn in the Western society, because that's exactly, we are doing exactly the opposite of what we have said and promoted for 80 years now. So this is a very sad thing, and nobody, it's interesting to see that nobody in the West, especially not in Europe and certainly not in the US, has realized this. And I don't know where we are heading, in fact, because we see that nobody has realized that we need to have more, to come back to value the values we had probably 50 years ago, that would praise work, hard work, and would praise the willingness of going beyond itself, beyond its own capacities, and do better, and do to be better than I was, you see. So this is absolutely not the mindset today. But you see that in China. The Chinese have been very strong to do that. And probably you see the same thing coming up in Russia as well, because now they are stimulated by this evolution that they had in the last 2 years that shows that they can do better than the West. It's interesting that during the Cold War, the Soviets at the time were looking at the West as the guys who do everything. They were capable, the West was capable of doing everything. And after the end of the Cold War, in the 90s or so, Russia started to rely on the West. they didn't realize that they were also able to do at least the same and even better than Europe. But that's probably the reason why you have seen this re-election of Vladimir Putin, because he was the one who could say to the Russians, you can do better. You can do not just the same as the European did, but you can even do better. And I think that's a little bit what affects, or let's say not affects, but helps the Russian society to develop itself. And that's probably because, as opposed to what some say, the development of Russia is not just in terms of how much oil they sell, or how much gas, natural gas they can sell. It goes beyond that, and you see that the industrial production is also boosts, and so that means that they've realized that they can do better. They are able to do that. And probably with the help of the Chinese, they will even do better. And we see today that Russia is, people start to realize in Europe that Russia has probably the strongest economy in Europe. And 2 years ago, people were saying that they had an economy that was more or less the one of the Spain or Italy. And today it's not the case. They realize that they were wrong. So there is a change in the mindset, there's a change in the mentalities, there's a change in the hopes. And this hope starts to be missing in Europe. And so we tend to be in a kind of a down a curve that is going downwards, while in the Eurasia, you may have this sense that there is hope in something better, and they are able to do that better. So that's my view on that. So I think this visit of Xi Jinping to two countries that are still very much Russia allies is probably an indication of how Eurasia takes a foot in Europe. And they still had to go to France to give the impression of some balance. But they went to see those two countries, as you rightly said, and I think it's a signal. Again, I think the European leadership is too much dogmatic and ideologic to understand that. But I think the message that was addressed by the Chinese, by the way, this is not the only message. Remember the way that Blinken was welcomed in China, and the difference when Russia was welcomed to China. There's a total difference. Blinken and Janet Yellen, they were welcomed by some individuals, some bureaucratic individual, but not by the right. Even if Blinken was received by Xi Jinping, but still, we could see that the Chinese didn't make any effort to make this visit something very positive for the Americans. And so, and even even though they, as I said before, if you see the curve on German investment in China has literally boomed in the last couple of months, the Chinese were not so keen to receive Olaf Scholz, and he was not welcomed as it should. So meaning that we see today that this Eurasian bloc understands that now this bloc is in command. And the failure of the West to acknowledge that is, I think, a big mistake that we are making. We have to acknowledge that and to try to establish partnerships. And instead of being antagonistic and confrontational, we should start to see how we can work together. And for good, I mean, again, we're talking, coming back to Ukraine, I remember that China has proposed a framework for a peace agreement. It was not a peace agreement, but they provided a framework for a peace agreement. And the West just despised this and said, well, that China, it's a dictatorship. So no question, we will not even consider that. I think it's a big mistake. And remember that during the Cold War, we talked to the Chinese, we talked to the Soviets, even though they were considered as dictatorships as well. But President Nixon made in the early 70s by establishing a diplomatic relationship and recognizing, by the way, the Republic of China, I mean the Popular Republic of China, this was a huge step in indicating that regardless of who is your partner, it can be a partner. And my personal view is, regardless of how we consider the domestic situation in China, in Russia, in Iran, or in Saudi Arabia, this shouldn't be a concern, because by establishing partnership, by establishing normal relationship, we can only help these countries to improve. I'm not sure that all accusations we say about these guys are right. I think there's a lot of fake news and misinformation on that. But even assuming that these allegations were right, it's not by banning them that we improve the situation. It's by improving partnership and helping them to improve. And this is... So for me, this is a total wrong way to address these states as pariah states. We should integrate them in the international community, work with them, helping them, and then we can, and then improve the situation. And that can only go with a equal partnership, with no consideration with domestic issues, and again, trying to promote, if we have values, which honestly, I start to doubt seriously, but let's admit we still have value that are worth sharing. Let's admit that. Then if we want to share these values, it will not be done by confrontation. Confrontation will just lead to these countries to reject our values. So if we want these values to be accepted, then we need to be in good terms with these guys. And that's the reason why I think there is absolutely no reason whatsoever to try to make these countries, to ban these countries from the international community. And that, I think the problem is that the West has not realized this, but it will be forced to realize this. Because in a few decades, the technological leadership will, without any question, be in the East. And when I say the East, it's not just China, it's also India, it's Southeast Asia, which is also extremely strong. We tend to forget that, but there is a huge amount of activities, I mean, intellectual and academic activities and technological activities in the whole of Asia. So meaning that we need to prepare for this time, which is probably not far away from now, in which we will need to be in good terms with it. We will not afford to be at odds with these guys. This is unaffordable for us. We need to think forward and think that we need to improve our relationship, because we will need this relationship in the future.